Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com worldwide. And I'm delighted to invite and indeed welcome Ambassador Susan M. Elliott, who is President and CEO of the National Committee on American Foreign Policy. And since 2018, it's headquartered at Mutual of America here in New York. And let me welcome Ambassador Susan. How are you?
Well, Adrian, I'm great, and thanks for having me on your program.
You are indeed welcome. Now, can you remember a time when you weren't in the diplomatic corps in your diplomatic career? You've been with there for 27 years, is that right?
Right. I worked for the U.S. Department of State for 27 years as a career foreign service officer, which means I was a diplomat, and I served in a variety of places, as well as in Washington. And I think one of the reasons I have a love for Northern Ireland is because one of my assignments was as the U.S. Consul General in Belfast. But I also served in other places in Europe, in Greece. I served in Russia twice, and I was U.S. ambassador to Tajikistan. So I've had kind of a wide variety of experiences as a diplomat, as well as working on these kinds of issues in Washington.
I want to ask you about, again, just as a coordinator for regional conflicts, you know, in particularly in new independent states, you've had quite a career and huge responsibility, but I suppose we could move to Northern Ireland. I do want to ask you though about if we can start at, I think, say your assignments in Russia, and obviously in Athens, Greece, Russia, wherever, and Peru. Were you there at a time, and what was the nature of your job, your position there?
Well, you know, I had a wide variety of assignments, and when I served in Peru, I was a consular officer. That was my first assignment as a diplomat, and I did visa interviews, which can be quite challenging, but it's necessary work that diplomats do. I served in Russia twice, once right after the fall of the Soviet Union, from 1992 to 94, and then I went back in 2009. It was during the Obama administration when we had what was referred to as the reset in our relations with Russia. And at that time, then I was the political counselor and worked on a lot of the U.S.-Russia bilateral political issues. But especially at that time, we were renegotiating a nuclear arms treaty, the START treaty. So that took a lot of our time and effort. But I've done a variety of things. I've done economic work. In Northern Ireland, as the Consul General, a lot of the work not only was political and economic, but I would call it public diplomacy in trying to bring, the U.S. And Northern Ireland closer together and kind of cement our transatlantic relationship. So I've done a variety of things, as well as work on the staff directly of several secretaries of state, from Warren Christopher up to and through Condoleezza Rice, in helping them. I worked in Washington, but worked on, and most of what I focused on was policy that was related to Europe and, countries of former Soviet Union. So, but now at the, also at the National Committee, we not only work on Northern Ireland, but we also have a very robust program that's focused on Asia, U.S.-China relations, U.S. Cross-Strait, China-Taiwan, North Korea. So I've got a wide experience on many foreign policy issues.
Now, as chair, president, and CEO of the National Committee on American Foreign Policy, you've held that position since 2018. So can you tell us a little bit about the mission of the National Committee on American Foreign Policy?
Well, you know, the National Committee on American Foreign Policy was formed back in 1974 by Hans Morgenthau, but and it was formed as an organization to be to help inform the public on issues, foreign policy issues that are of importance to the United States of America. And until the 1990s, basically we held meetings, wrote papers about different foreign policy issues. But in the 1990s, the chairman of our board of trustees at the time was Bill Flynn, William Flynn, who was also the CEO of Mutual of America Investment Group. And he was very interested, as an Irish-American, in trying to find a way, you know, to bring peace to Northern Ireland, because that, at the time, you know, it was the trouble. So we began working on Northern Ireland and conflict resolution. I wasn't part of the organization then, but back in the early 90s. And in 1994, for those of your listeners who don't know, it was our organization, and through Bill Flynn and Tom Moran, who also worked with Bill, and other influential Irish Americans, that we convinced President Bill Clinton that it was time that we worked on bringing peace to, you know, to Northern Ireland. And Bill Clinton made the decision, which now, looking back, you know, more than 25 years, was an historic one, to allow Gerry Adams to come to the United States of America to have these, what I will call conflict resolution, or what we call track two, non-government discussions, bringing people in conflict together. And it wasn't only Gerry Adams that came, but we also had David Trimble and John Hume, among others, who met right here, and we sponsored the meetings that were held at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel back in 1994. And I'm proud to say that, you know, because of the leadership of Bill Flynn and Tom Moran, that those discussions led to what became the process of what that led to the Good Friday Agreement. And it was really, you know, now that's the 25th anniversary of Good Friday Agreement, it was very interesting. I went to the celebrations in Belfast in April, and it was very interesting to hear, especially not only the leaders of Northern Ireland's political groups, but George Mitchell and the three, you know, to me, leaders, Bill Clinton, Bertie Ahern, and Tony Blair. And you can see 25 years on that the relationships that they built and the courage that they had to try to help bring this peace process was extremely important. And I would say that, you know, the National Committee on American Foreign Policy, many people don't realize now, but without the bold actions of Bill Flynn, we may not have been where we are today.
You know, Ambassador, as a non-profit organization, you know, dedicated again to the resolution of conflicts that threaten U.S. interests, I think that's very significant, in that this organization is apolitical, number one.
Correct.
And that it identifies, beyond doubt, you know, the connection between the United States and conflicts and resolutions, as we have in Northern Ireland. So to that end, might I ask you about how the how the National Committee on American Foreign Policy, how do you get involved, and do countries approach you? Is the U.S. You know, a job to kind of keep an eye and become involved, you know, invite yourselves, as it is, you know, to become part of conflict resolution?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Adrian, and I think the success that we had at the beginning back in the 1990s, I led us to become involved in more kinds of conflict resolution situations. And just to give you an example, because we had focused mainly on Europe and a lot on Northern Ireland, but probably, and now it's been 20 years ago, the success we had there led others in conflict to say, would you be interested in hosting and what I would call track two discussions? These are non-government, off-the-record discussions among people from countries in conflict. And then the people come together, make recommendations, and then we share those with the governments. But that's how we got from Northern Ireland. We were asked to become involved in cross Tyrone Strait dialogues. And we began hosting, as a third neutral party, these kinds of discussions between mainland China and Taiwan. And those continue till today. And from that, then we were also asked to become involved in the Korean Peninsula. So, and by that I mean, you know, talks on how to handle North Korea. And we continue, in fact, we have permission from the U.S. government to be able to hold dialogues with the North Koreans. We haven't held one for quite a while because of the current situation. The North Koreans don't talk to one another. But that also led us, we also host dialogues between where we bring together people from the Republic of Korea, South Korea, and Japan, because those two countries don't, you know, even though there are allies in that region, they don't see eye to eye on a lot of issues, and so we host talks with them. And we hadn't hosted a lot of talks on Northern Ireland in the recent past until Brexit. And Brexit has kind of brought to the forefront a lot of issues that you know, I'm sure your listeners know, that have related to, you know, causing the potential to have more conflict problems in Northern Ireland. So, but that's how we do it. I would say it's word of mouth, perhaps, or we've, you know, we have a history of doing these kinds of talks, so people will approach us to do talks, and all of these are private, off-the-record talks. We don't attribute to Chatham House Rules. We don't attribute who said what, but we do write reports. And in fact, you know, the pandemic really, to me, in March of 2020, I thought, well, how's my organization going to succeed if we can't have public education programs, if we can't talk to people, bring people together? And so we did move everything to the virtual space during the pandemic, but now we are back to bringing people together, and we're going to do a combination of virtual talks and in-person talks. And in fact, for your listeners who might be interested in U.S.-China relations for Taiwan, we just released a report today because, you know, Secretary of State Blinken is going to be going to Beijing. So I guess for me, as a former diplomat, this is a really good kind of follow-on career, because what we do, we don't try to make foreign policy, but we try to help our you know, leaders in Washington to make good policy decisions on whatever issue it is. And we also inform and have great relations with the officials from the countries who are in conflict. So we don't, perhaps, you know, we don't have officials from the Japanese government in on our talks,
right.
But then we briefed them on what we have found and on our reports. So we have really good relations. I mean, we have really good relations with Beijing as well, because we're seen as an honest broker, someone who really, an organization who wants to improve not only U.S.-China relations, but to keep peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait and to keep, you know, peace and stability in Northeast Asia. So, so it's quite a lot that we do, for a small nonprofit organization, but, I'm pretty proud of the work we do.
Now, on this week, Thursday, there was a meeting held in the Irish consulate here in New York, and indeed the your committee held a roundtable meeting with Ambassador Ruri de Burka, and you know, with a great cross section of participants from the Irish American community to discuss, you know, a perspective on Ireland-U.S. bilateral relations, you know, current political developments in Northern Ireland, and obviously the British-Irish relations in this post-Brexit landscape. Now, on in frank discussions, and again, as I say, they are those discussions are between very interested parties, but there are other issues which we are concerned about, and perhaps some of those might be that despite the tremendous success of the 25 years of peace in Northern Ireland, there is a concern that perhaps the current generation, or, you know, future generations, might assume that everything is hunky-dory. It's lovely, thank you. You know, there's the Good Friday Agreement, and you know, that was a ceasefire by all sides. So therefore, everything is fine, let's move on. Is that a topic for discussion? Is that something that you find that a lot of participants, you know, in your meetings are concerned about?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, Adrian. And, you know, the National Committee just recently wrote a report, and I can give you a link to it, of some studies that we've been doing and engagement we've had since March of 2020. But the meeting you're referring to is a good example of how we engage with Irish America, with the Irish government, with the British government. But as part of the report we did, we, you know, during the pandemic, we engaged with community leaders in Northern Ireland virtually. But then, you know, now that we can get together on the margins of the April event, my staff and I went, and we met with a lot of, we met with representatives from all the political parties. We met with people from the communities, and that's one of the things that I think that concerns people here. It's, you know, keeping, I think, young people maybe who were born after the Troubles or don't understand, maybe they don't have as much in what I'll call identity politics. They just want, you know, peace and stability and economic prosperity in Northern Ireland. But, you know, there is still a lot of work to do 25 years after the, you know, the Good Friday Agreement. As your listeners probably know, you know, there have been issues with, I mean, Stormont and, you know, the government not being up and running. And budgetary issues. Brexit has brought one of the things that we found, and young people, especially in community leaders, were concerned about this, is that funding that they had from the European Union that has now gone away, you know, has not been replaced by the British government, and a lot of the cross-community programs that have been very successful over the past 25 years are in danger of not being able to, you know, to continue on. And I do think one of the other recommendations that we had thought about too is your listeners may know, you know, there's some legislation which people call the Legacy and Reconciliation Bill that the British government has proposed, which will limit the ability for victims to, you know, to have their cases heard. So we think, you know, that there are, Northern Ireland is definitely better. No one wants to go back. It's better than, well, I went there. My first time I went was in 1995 when President Clinton went, because I was a staff member. I went back then, 2000, and, you know, to see the difference, and then I was there from 2007 to 2009. I lived there. So Northern Ireland is on a good, you know, trajectory, and I think one of the things that we and the U.S. plays a role in this, and I think President Biden, by appointing Joe Kennedy as a special envoy, has shown that we're concerned and we want to help. I don't think that young people think that, you know, they can take peace for granted. However, they want to see things, their concerns are jobs, education, you know, things that will help them not to have to look other places or to have a career and a home. You know, and that is what happened in the past, is young people left and went either to Europe or, you know, London, UK, or came to the US. And I think more and more we're seeing people can stay. Yeah. But there is a sense of, you know, there's a kind of a group that feel left behind, and these may be, you know, not middle class, but, you know, working class people who, a lot of them, are from the loyalist communities. And, and I think this is where, the U.S. can play a role in working with the British and the Irish governments. And we did talk in our meeting yesterday about the kinds of programs that would help not only bring communities together, but, you know, to help, the countries, I mean, the people who feel left behind, that, well, what is the Good Friday Agreement? You know, what is the peace dividend, you know, for me? And I do think that there's going to be, we talked about this yesterday, an investment conference, I think it's in September, that, you know, Special Envoy Kennedy is going to host. So, you know, to me, these are the reasons why we need to continue a strong transatlantic relationship, and I think President Biden's been very supportive of that. But, you know, in the time that I was a diplomat, okay, President Biden, I guess we'd expect him to be because he's Irish American, but in the Obama administration, when I served in Northern Ireland, it was in the Bush administration, and President Bush visited Northern Ireland. So I think it's one of the things in Washington, when you look at Washington and say, well, where's the bipartisan issue that people can agree on, and this is one thing I think in our Congress that people do agree on, is support for Northern Ireland.
There are, and I'd like you to comment on this, would things have been much better had Brexit not come as an interference as it was? Is there a general feeling that without Brexit it would be a lot easier to adhere and, as a matter of fact, sink our teeth into the Good Friday, the Belfast Good Friday Agreement? How do you connect those, or do we, and in what order do we connect those?
Well, I mean, definitely Brexit has had an effect on the Belfast Good Friday Agreement and Northern Ireland. And one thing that this came up as a topic of discussion, you know, during the 25th anniversary program at the Queen's University hosted, was this question. When the Good Friday Agreement was signed and, you know, put together, no one envisioned that the UK would no longer be part of the European Union. So the Good Friday Agreement you know, takes away a border on the island of Ireland. There is no border, you know, in the Irish Sea. So that, you know, there's one common market. There's one way, you know, people in Northern Ireland can choose, you know, if they want to have an Irish passport or a British passport. And all Brexit really has, well, put all that, those kinds of things into jeopardy. And I think we've seen that especially the relationship, not just Ireland, but between the EU and the UK mm-hmm. has become, you know, very, contentious at times. And Northern Ireland is the one place where, because Ireland is the only country that, of the European Union that has a border with the UK. No one else does. So it really has had, an impact. And I think, putting aside that there are things in the Good Friday Agreement, like the Bill of Human Rights and some of the other things that have never been implemented, what I do think that Brexit has done has put, you know, a strain on, the kind of the peace and stability. I don't think that people are looking, not to have a peace, but I think what people are looking for is, you know, how are we going to resolve all these issues? Because most people I've talked to, and as you recall, Northern Ireland, whether you're unionist or you're nationalist, didn't vote for, to come out of the European Union. So, mm-hmm. So it has caused a strain and has also, I think, renewed people thinking about should there be a decision about a border poll? Should there be a decision about, you know, a United Ireland? All are things that I think are issues that, you know, the people of the island of Ireland will have to face in the future. But I will say that Brexit definitely, I don't know, I can't speak for the people who, you know, put this to a referendum, but I don't think people were thinking about the impact it would have on the island of Ireland by the, you know, by the UK coming out of the EU. And I do think it puts the US kind of in a precarious position because the US, you know, the UK and Ireland are our strongest partners and allies. And so mm-hmm. we want to make sure that we can keep that partnership among our three countries as strong as it has been and ever will be. Because we need to work on other things mm-hmm. besides Northern Ireland, like Ukraine, like, you know, climate change, like many other issues that, you know, as like-minded democratic countries we see together. And so that's a long way of saying, yes, I think Brexit has caused issues for Northern Ireland, but I do think that, you know, given the Windsor framework and the engagement of the, you know, the U.S. and the engagement mm-hmm. between Ireland and the U.K., that things are moving in the right direction.
Contentious as, you know, they as the situation is, again, I think that, you know, for the past 50 years, the National Committee on American Foreign Policy has earned a reputation that it deserves in that it is, it's neutral. You don't have any dog in the fight, so to say, other than to basically be there as a peace broker.
Well, I mean, I do see it as that, and in fact, we probably are in a really good position to be able, and we have, I think we've earned the reputation we have of being, you know, we're nonpartisan. We also, we're a nonprofit organization, so we do rely on getting funding from, you know, grants and foundations and donors. But the idea that we've continued on so long on these issues is because we are a neutral party. You know, for me, I always said, even back to when I was Consul General in Belfast, it's like, you know, whether there's a United Ireland or Northern Ireland state part of the UK, really doesn't matter to me. What I want is what the people of, you know, mm-hmm. Northern Ireland want. And that's what's important. And if we as Americans can help the people there to sort out the issues, then that's what the objective of our organization was. And I think, you know, going back to Bill Flynn and Tom Moran, you know, they're, where they wanted to stop the violence and stop the conflict, but I do think that everyone has the same kind of goals to have peace and stability for people who live, you know, in on the island of Ireland. And I think just as a even a little side note, you know, it was kind of an honor for me, you know, Tom Moran and now Hillary Clinton, they're both chancellors, you know, chancellor, she's the current chancellor, and Tom is the previous chancellor of Queen's University. And before Tom, when I was there, it was George Mitchell. So I think we've had the U.S. a really positive impact on what happens in Northern Ireland, and I see that continue.
Now, I want to ask Ambassador, for our listeners, is there, and what is the process to check out, or perhaps for those who are listening who might want to join as members in the National Committee on American Foreign Policy, is there, are you still encouraging new members? And how does that, what does that process entail?
Oh, yeah, in fact, we always love to have new members, and we just had an in-person program. You know, this week I had on Thursday a program about Northern Ireland, but on Tuesday I had a program about the Middle East and, you know, what's happening in the Middle East and China's influence there. And that was more, the one at the Irish consulate was a smaller private discussion, and but we also host public discussions for our members. Anyone could come, and you can buy a ticket for $25, but I would encourage people, if they're interested, you can go to our website. It's ncafp.org, and it shows you how you can become a member. And then you do would get invited to the programs that we have, definitely the public programs we have. And then, you know, on sometimes, again, in private discussions, we invite our members. Like the program that you mentioned that we had at the Irish consulate, most of the people at that were either members of our board of trustees or people who are our supporters. So it gives, this is an opportunity for people in Irish America to talk with someone from, you know, from the Irish government on and be in a small, intimate discussion. And we do that. We've hosted Doug Beatty from the, you know, the unionists from the Ulster Unionist Party. We've hosted Mary Lou McDonald. We hosted Colm Eastwood. So we've hosted all the Northern Ireland political leaders as well. And we've also had discussions with, we have great relations with, you know, the UK consulate here. So if you became one of our members, there are different levels of membership, but then you would be entitled to be involved in all our, you know, all our programming and suggest programming. So we love new members, and we've been looking to attract new and more, you know, students. And we had a program. We have a good relationship with NYU, and we've held a program at the, you know, the Glucksman Ireland House there. Mm-hmm. And Loretta Brennan Glucksman has been one of our members. We have an award in Bill Flynn's name, and we recently gave that. Well, we gave it to President Clinton, and we also gave it to Sean Kelly. Jerry Adams received that in the past. So we do have a fundraiser in the fall that, again, anyone who might be interested in that, you know, we'll be having more information to that. And that's when we honor people who have made significant contributions either in the Irish peace process, that's our, William J. Flynn Award, but we also have the Hans Morgenthau Award for people, and we gave that to Hillary Clinton, but we also gave that back in 2017 to Joe Biden. So, we have a lot of good relations with, with members of, not only Irish America, but U.S. government.
Ambassador, really, this has been a great conversation, and I think that perhaps so many issues, and as time marches on, sometimes we need a reminder that, yes, great that President Biden visited Ireland, and it is also obviously terrific that we now have a special envoy, in having a Kennedy there, but also we should bear in mind that, your organization, of which you're president, has been consistent along the way in being apolitical, which I think is probably something of great value, and we congratulate you as you go along. Ambassador,
thank you very much for having me.
And again, well, thank you. And also, friends, log on to www.ncafp.org. Okay, and that is the National Committee on American Foreign Policy. My guest, Ambassador Susan Elliott, the President and CEO, headquartered at Mutual of America. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.